There is a children's privacy protection law for digital devices and apps. It just doesn't really work. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with Common Sense Media about children's data privacy and privacy concerns. That conversation starts now.
Hello and welcome back. Each family with children has a decision to make at some point. When and or if do the children get smartphones or maybe a tablet too? Bill Gates held off until his daughter was 14. Steve Jobs, before he died, did not allow his kids on the devices. Behavior is one consideration, of course, oversharing and that kind of stuff. But data privacy for minors is also a consideration. There is a law in place that was originally designed to protect children's data. It's called the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, or known as COPPA, and it's badly outdated.
COPPA allows kids to be tracked by marketers if their parents opt into that marketing. So if the parent says, I consent to my kid being tracked, your kid will be tracked, but you have opted in.
Our next guest is a senior parenting editor at Common Sense Media, a not-for-profit think tank that examines entertainment, data, and anything that touches a kid's life. Here we go.
Caroline Knorr, and I'm the senior parenting editor at Common Sense Media.
Thank you for your time, because I saw a report from the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, a report about that, and I wanted to talk with you guys about kids and mobile. I mean, let's start at a 30,000-foot level. What are some of the things that you have noticed in your research and findings and discussions with parents when it comes to kids and apps?
Parents buy the phones. So that tells the provider that the owner of the phone is an adult. Now, COPPA allows kids to be tracked by marketers if their parents opt into that marketing. So if the parent says, I consent to my kid being tracked, your kid will be tracked, but you have opted in. But a lot of people don't know that they're opting in. The language is very obscure, and a lot of this stuff is like you just go, yes, 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 yes. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, your kid is being tracked by marketers. Every single thing they do on their phones. A lot of people go, well, what's wrong with that? And the problem is there's no transparency. So we don't know what companies are using this data for. They share a lot of that data, and they're exposed to hacking. They're exposed to big data breaches. And I think the bottom line is we just don't want a bunch of companies knowing everything our kids do, because the telecoms track the phones by satellite as well. So they can sort of triangulate all that information. They know exactly what your kid is doing after school, where they go, who they're texting. And, you know, bottom line is they're not transparent about it.
I see here that seven researchers looked at 6,000 apps and found at least 1,000 were not complying with COPPA. They were not being transparent, like you mentioned. They just simply aren't doing their job very well. Are you finding a lot of people just taking it? I mean, if you don't opt in, don't they just take it?
I think part of the problem with COPPA, which is the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, is it's actually a little outdated and it needs updating. So Common Sense Media is behind an advocacy effort to get COPPA updated, and because when it was created several years, you know, sort of like when like the internet was not when it was invented, but when we're really widespread use.
Right.
COPPA just did not keep up with the pace of the adoption of mobile, especially by kids. So part of the issue with COPPA, the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, is in a way it just doesn't go far enough in protecting our kids from what they need to be protected from, which is a lot of this, you know, third-party providers. Mm-hmm. You give like one of the main apps, for example, Facebook, you're going to give Facebook all your information. And then if you want to play a game on Facebook or even on Snapchat or Instagram or all the other little apps that kids are using, there's a lot of third-party add-ons mm-hmm. that basically you've consented to just giving them all of your information. They don't know personally identifiable information. Like, they don't know, like, oh, your kid is John Jones and he's in third grade at whatever school. Like, they don't really know that. But they can follow a lot of, they can aggregate that data. And they pretend that they can do it legally because they're covered by COPPA, because someone had opted into those consents. But it just doesn't actually really go far enough.
In this study, though, I have to say they did find some apps were collecting identifying information from kids. So it was identifiable information as well. So it's not just the activity that's being done. Some of these bad actors are getting at actual identities. So it's something to keep track of too, right?
You know, the way a lot of this works is you give your kid a phone. You can even set up Apple Pay or any, you can put your credit card on it, usually the parent's credit card. And the kid will go into the app store and buy whatever they want. So all of that information that it was included in the purchase and the setup of the phone also goes into that. So that's one of the ways that companies can get around COPPA, because if an adult has made the purchase and opted in initially, that phone is tracked. And usually people don't go back in and reset all of the settings for a person who is under 13 years old, which is what COPPA really covers.
Okay. All right. I'm glad you helped me stipulate that point. I will also add, and this is not a question, but it will lead to one, I promise. But it reminds me that when you're in a corporation and you have a vendor, and let's say I have a podcast company that lives outside of the Cumulus network that I work for, my data is only as strong as every vendor I have. So data security can be just as strong as the weakest link in a chain. And that's something that we have to keep track of, too, right? Because these apps could be sharing information over unsecured lines, digitally speaking.
Absolutely. And, you know, part of the problem is one of the sort of like the great things about availability of so many cool apps is that, you know, it really allows kids to be connected to the world and learn new things and, you know, really play fun games and stay connected to their friends. Like, all of that stuff is great. And there's nothing wrong with that. And companies, you know, they have to have a business model and make money off of that. But they're not super transparent about the way they collect that data and the way they share that data. Mm-hmm. And that's what you are getting at with, you know, your privacy is only as secure as the weakest link in the chain. Some of those guys are, you know, they don't have the top security people working at the company. They don't have the top engineers. And what has actually come out is a lot of the products that some of the new products, like, you know, even like the smart products like Hello Barbie and some of those smart toys and things like that have been vulnerable to hacks because they are not using the most updated security, the state-of-the-art security. That was what was revealed in some of the data, big data breaches. And so it's absolutely crucial. The only thing is you won't know. So what I really advise parents to do is to only give as much information as is necessary to sign up for a product or download an app or whatever it is. So usually that's just like your name and your email address, right? So they might go, would you like to give us your home address? Would you like to give us, you know, all of your friends' names? And you can say no to a lot of that stuff. Okay. And if it seems like an overreach by any app that you get, if they're like, well, we're going to share all of your data with everybody and we're going to, you know, we're going to track your location, all that kind of stuff, then you can go, that looks like a bad app. One of the things I actually noticed in the App Store this morning, I was scrolling through, and what the App Store in the Apple App Store is doing is they're actually creating curated lists of apps under certain categories. And I like that because the App Store is known for being fairly secure. They actually vet all of their apps, and absolutely, sometimes things are taken down. The Android store, you know, it's good, but it has, that's one of the trade-offs with the, if you go with Android, is you get a lot more access to different stuff, but they don't necessarily vet the same way that Apple does. But I like those curated lists because then you have somebody who checked off a list and said, these apps are good for this category, rather than just going in blindly and just downloading whatever looks like it might be good. Now, the other thing is free apps can be a little bit risky because an app, if it's free, a lot of times those companies are using your download as their opt-in to collecting all of your data. I mean, I love free apps, and I rarely want to pay for an app, but sometimes I will just go, you know what, I'm just going to pay the $1.99 and get this thing, because I know that that is just one step that, in a way, indicates a higher quality of, like, the people who work at that company, the developers and everybody who's created that. And so they're not just trying to do a big data grab.
Children's online privacy, how would Common Sense Media like to see COPPA updated? What would you change?
We'd like to see COPPA be clearer about really how It works. So the way COPA works is if a parent opts into a product for their kid, a perfect example is Gmail. So you can register your under 13-year-old kid for a Gmail account as long as it'll be under your name and you say, yes, I know that the company is going to be tracking this account. If you have opted in as a parent for your under 13-year-old kid, then you kind of basically give consent for everything to be tracked. Wow. And I don't think parents even know that. So the basic thing is we really need to understand. A lot of parents will go, well, isn't it illegal for my kid to use like a program like Instagram that's supposed to be for kids that are 13 and older? And actually, no. If you as a parent say, yeah, my kid can use Instagram, you are consenting for Instagram, whose owner is Facebook, to track all of the data associated with that account, even if they're under 13 years old. So we need to be very clear about what that policy states. We also, at Common Sense Media, want everything to be opt-in. We want the default on location services, on third-party data sharing. We want that all to be off, which is not now. Even if you have a public account, a lot of times that is default public. We want that to be default private. So when you go in as a user, you can go, well, gee, do I want my location to be public?
Right.
You turn that off or on. Right now, basically, a lot of the companies just go, everything is default on.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what gets the companies a lot of data. We'd really like to see that model change. Companies are just monetizing your data. And a lot of parents go, well, what's wrong with that? And the problem is companies are not transparent about it. They don't tell you what they're using. And the other really secret thing is you are opting into a whole range of future uses for your data that probably haven't even been invented yet. And that's another thing that COPA needs to be updated for is, like, for example, if you get an Alexa or a Google Home or one of the home assistants, if you check, yes, I consent for this product to track my data, you are also saying yes to a whole bunch of things that Amazon and Google have not even created yet because they want to leave the door open to collect your data for future services that they invent. That's a big problem.
I hadn't thought about that one. I have to admit.
Yeah. A problem that occurs right now is, let's say your kid downloads a reading app, right? It's a supplementary reading app. It's possible that the company who has created that reading app is saying, if you opt into this product, we have the right to share your data with anyone we choose. What if that is a school, for example? Then they target your kid as an underachieving reader. And that's the kind of thing that can follow them for life. And that's the kind of thing that you are opting into with some of these data policies that do a data overreach. They're going, we want everything, and we're going to share it with everybody. And again, that's just a problem that is not really obvious to a user when you download just I want this reading app. Well, what are you signing into? And those policies need to be extremely clear. They need to be in plain language so everybody can understand them, not in legalese, which they usually are now. And we want parents to have the choice to be able to opt into how those products are going to share your data, especially your kids' data, going forward.
That's a great example. Thank you for that. And Carolyn,
sure.
thank you for your time, and thanks for all you guys do over at Common Sense Media. We really appreciate it.
Great talking with you.
That was Carolyn Knorr. She's the senior parenting editor at commonsensemedia.org. For links to COPA and Common Sense Media, please check out kgoradio.com and look for the show notes for this week. Next up, Apple versus Samsung from the courtroom. It's about a $1 billion question when it comes to Apple's assertion that Samsung infringed on 3 of Apple's design patents. Apple is seeking more than $1 billion in a settlement. Samsung argues it should pay $28 million at most. The case is with the jury as we record this, so we're going to play both sides with someone who was in the courtroom during the trial. Here we go.
Mike Swift, I'm the Chief Global Correspondent for Privacy and Data Security for MLEX Market Insight.
Okay, Apple and Samsung are back in the courtroom. You're the reporter in the courtroom. Give us your nut graph as to why we are here, and then we'll talk about what it's like.
So we're here because this jury has to make a decision on how much money Samsung has to pay Apple for infringing 3 patents on the design of the iPhone. A jury initially decided back in 2012 that the patents were infringed, but because Samsung appealed the way the damages were awarded, the case went all the way up to the United States Supreme Court, and it's come all the way back down to San Jose now. And now, so this jury has to make the call on the size of the check that Samsung has to write.
Right, and I think Samsung has been arguing $28 million at most, and Apple somewhere above $1 billion. Is that about right?
That's exactly right. Apple is asking for $1.067 billion. Samsung is saying, no, we shouldn't pay more than $28 million.
All right, so it's been sent to the jury, and it's been deliberated for a few days. As we go to tape, we do not have a verdict yet. I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you about what you think is going to happen, but I will ask you what it's been like in the courtroom.
This trial was interesting because it was so short that both sides were really forced to kind of distill their arguments out. So in terms of the importance of the iPhone's design, and there was some interesting testimony early on from Richard Howarth, who is the head of design just under Johnny Ive at Apple, about, you know, how the iPhone, the shape, the appearance of it, the arrangement of the icons, you know, how that was really sort of groundbreaking at the time. We're 10 years into having smartphones. We kind of forget how revolutionary they actually were when the iPhone was really first introduced. We also had some pretty deep in the weeds testimony about something called the article of manufacture, which is what the jury really has to decide. And the crux of this case is the article of manufacture, which is the basis for damages, is it the whole phone or is it the specific patented components, which is what Samsung argues. Apple's saying it's the whole phone.
You know, you make a great point about us forgetting about how revolutionary the iPhone was. As I recall, when Steve Jobs was on stage in 2007, he had to say it 3 times before even the developers in the audience understood that we're talking about 3 things in one, you know? I mean,
yep. Yeah. I mean, that was before the App Store was unveiled, right?
That's right.
So we didn't even know, you know, the whole idea of an app economy didn't exist. That was something that evolved over time.
Hey, so why has the trial been so fast? I mean, I know that it's at the jury. That could go on for an indefinite period of time, but you guys were in the courtroom for X amount of days. Why was it so curtailed?
Because that's what Judge Koh, who's presided over all these trials, ordered. There's something called the Groundhog Day rule, which is based on the Bill Murray movie that, you know, everyone remembers. And that basically says that you can't introduce any new evidence in this trial that hasn't been introduced in a previous trial. So they just need to tell the jury the bare minimum to go forward and make this decision. So
Okay. There
were a whole lot of things that were left out in this trial, and that made it actually a lot more fun to cover, I have to say.
That's true. It also surprises me that Howarth did not testify earlier. If you're not allowed to introduce new evidence, can you get testimony from somebody who has previously testified, or is this his first time?
No, they had different designers that in the first trial, there was a guy named Christopher Stringer, if my memory is correct, and he showed up to court wearing nothing but a white suit, you know, looking like a member of ABBA or something, and I'm not sure that went over so well with some of the attorneys, so maybe they got someone who they knew would be a bit more cooperative.
All right, Mike, well, thanks a lot for your time today.
Thank you.
That was Mike Swift, chief correspondent at MLEX.com. You can find links to Mike's coverage at MLEX.com or at KGORadio.com. And that is it for this week's show. We hope you liked the stories as much as we did putting them together. Now, the podcasts. Those often have extended interviews and are easy to like, follow, or share, of course. Search Techonomics on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, really just anywhere you pull down your podcasts. We are online, too, at kgoradio.com/Techonomics, also at facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. And I'm on Twitter. I'm at KGOJason. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton. Have great weeks, everybody, and thanks for listening.